we've been wondering if there's been an uptick in schoolyard brawls.
This guy lied. Let me just tell you, this guy lied about Ben Carson.
Well, I've said he's been lying because if you say something that isn't true and you say it over and over again and you know that it's not true, there's no other word.
These guys are world-class liars. It's unbelievable.
And you pushed him. Why do you lie?
Donald, adults learn not to interrupt you.
Why do you lie?
Senator, he lies this time. He lied. 100%. 100%.
Senator, you lied about the Polish workers.
Oh, yeah.
You lied to the students of Trump University.
That's Senator Khrushchev.
Oh, he lied 38 years ago. All right. I guess there's a statute of limitation on lies.
On the Democratic side, Hillary Clinton told a protester she was sick of lies from the Sanders campaign. Sanders said Donald Trump was a pathological liar. How will this go down in history? And what can we learn from history about lying? Well, for one thing, it was once thought that only God could determine who was telling the truth. Harvard history professor Jill Lepore writes about all this in The New Yorker. She joins us in the studio. Welcome.
Hey.
So when did you first start noticing this? All the slings and arrows, I think, that are being slung.
Well, you know, I've actually been interested in deception for a really long time. I've been fascinated by ways in which we track who tells the truth and whether it's possible to tell who's lying.
And yet accusations of lying were at one point a lot more eloquent.
Yeah. Well, I spend a lot of time reading old newspapers because a lot of what I teach and write is really early American history. And it's easy to think that it was much cleaner and less nasty then. But it actually, a lot of the difference really is just with the language. It's sort of attacks and counterattacks are more sly and they're a little bit more literary.
So I'm thinking of John Adams here. You have what Jeffersonians would say about him?
Yeah. So the election of 1800 was this famously vitriolic campaign between the supporters of Thomas Jefferson and those of John Adams. They didn't attack each other directly, but their supporters did their
dirty work.
Dirty work for them. So supporters of Thomas Jefferson said that Adams engaged in every species of villainous deception of which the human heart in its last stage of depravity is capable.
It's just so much. I mean, that's just, at least it's more fun than you lie.
Yeah, it is. It has a kind of it's sort of blunted in that way.
Yeah. Well, in more modern times, we have the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth, as they called themselves, even though they were discredited by people who said they were actually lying about John Kerry's record. But that was awfully messy, you know, accusing a war veteran of lying about his record. You have Tricky Dick, Richard Nixon. But is there something different about now?
I do think there are some differences about now. And I think that mainly, partly just as a teacher, teaching younger people who find it difficult to figure out who is telling the truth in a different way than I did when I was their age. I don't mean to sound sort of old fogeyish, but there's a way in which the diffusion of authority across the internet does make it difficult to identify credible sources of authority when you weren't raised with one sort of particular source of information that you knew. Well, like in my house, it was our World Book Encyclopedia. Like that was actually kind of the end
of
the
discussion.
End of the line. You know, I think it's actually extremely hard, especially if you're a young person, to sort things out.
Well, maybe this is what we're seeing, these accusations of lying, because there is a sense that people are just having their own truths. And you quote a new book by Michael Lynch, The Internet of Us, Knowing More and Understanding Less in the Age of Big Data. Talk about that book in the context, as you also do, of the history of sort of truth.
Yeah, so Lynch is a philosopher. He teaches at UConn. And all of his work as a philosopher has been about truth, a kind of defense of empiricism.
Empiricism from the Enlightenment, the idea that you ask questions and you came up with answers, empirical evidence that something was true.
That all that we can know is the result of reasoning and inquiry and experimentation. Mm-hmm. So Lynch is a philosopher in this tradition who wants to argue that we have in some ways gone far wrong from that and that there's a way to reclaim the tradition of empiricism. Lynch talks a lot about the rise of big data and the role of Google and how we kind of Google know things, like we can only find things out that we can find on Google.
Well, a couple things. First of all, why isn't Google just like your old encyclopedia?
So in your old encyclopedia, it's you who do the searching. Let's see, if you want to find out about zebras and you look up about zebras and then you don't know the word quadruped, you might then go look up the word quadruped. But you are actually driving the car. Google searching is like riding in a smart car. Mm-hmm. You know, you have a destination that you plug in, but how you go, which route you take, whether you see things along the way, these are decisions that you have outsourced to a machine.
Well, and you also say that what's happened now is everybody's choosing their own truth.
Well, yeah, and a lot of people make this observation that we receive information – nearly exclusively from the web, and our browsers are customized to us and who we are demographically and who we are politically and who we are geographically. Even if we weren't consciously choosing, oh, I have the New York Times as my homepage, oh, I have the Drudge Report as my homepage, or whatever it is that we, the choices that we make, the way that ideas, especially political ideas, also scientific ideas, I mean, it's the case that people always raise and recognize when we think about the indeterminacy of truth is the debate over climate change. You know, 90% of the world's climate scientists believe that human activity has caused climate change. And it is settled science is the phrase that people like to use. But for people who don't believe that, that information is not that visible to them in the way that they navigate their own browsers.
You talked about empirical evidence, but there was another time in history where it was just whoever was stronger. Whoever was stronger was right. It's like the kid that you write about that took your baseball bat. He had your baseball bat, and therefore it became true that it was his because he had it. Tell me how you take these different times in history and where we had different ways of finding the truth. God or strength or empirical evidence. How do you apply that to today's candidates?
I find it concerning that so much of what is described as debate, in terms of just being billed as tonight's debate, is really combat. And combat has a really quite different history and very different origins than debate. And combat is not actually that useful in a democracy. In fact, it rewards the mighty. It doesn't promote the idea of equality. And so it's tough to watch and see how vestigial it seems. You know what I mean? Just it actually people will say, if you talk to people on the street, did you watch the debate last night? Oh my God, it was so childish. It was so schoolyard. It's not a partisan reaction. You can see that on both sides. And it's not quite childish. It's that childhood is sort of a historical atavism. Like children live in a kind of lawless society, or the rules of childhood are actually the rules by which people used to live in the West. The very most common means both of criminal investigation and of actually arbitration and adjudication of disputes was either trial by combat, really, well, fight you for it, or trial by ordeal. And both of those forms of trial.
Trial by ordeal, like somebody.
Trial is like she's a witch. If you dunk her in the water, if she floats, she's a witch.
Right.
If she drowns, she wasn't a witch. You know, that.
It's that sort of God deciding.
Right.
True.
And both of them are actually God deciding, right? Mm-hmm. Both of them are about a world in which, this is sort of the medieval Christian worldview, that we can't judge one another, whether or not we're sinful or we've committed a crime. And they're more or less the same thing in that worldview. Only God can decide. And so what are some means by which we can witness God's decision? How can God make that manifest? So throw the witch in the pond, or set the accuser against the accused and let them fight it out. And, you know, God will out.
Well, so take Trump, Cruz, Marco Rubio, former candidate. You say that Trump is still in that mode of the most powerful is right. Cruz is basing his truth on faith, and Rubio is more data. You know, remember he famously said, Google it.
Yeah. I was so fascinated watching that. This was a February debate. Trump is, I don't know, walking around like, let's have some fisticuffs. You know, it's this very, like, let's just fight it out. I'll be louder. I'll be more outrageous. And therefore, I will win. And, you know, that's his whole promise. I will fight for you. It is actually, it talks a lot about combat. It's quite interesting. Cruz really, you know, is a very devout evangelical Christian, and he prays at his rallies, and he's the fate of his candidacy is in the hands of God, and God will determine who will be the next president of the United States. It is very much a kind of trial by ordeal for Cruz. I mean, that doesn't mean he doesn't undertake to turn events to his preferred outcome.
Well, and there are accusations on the left as well, who's telling the truth about Wall Street support or gun rights or whatever it is. But where is your sense as an historian? We're not going back to the days where everybody had the same encyclopedia. Are we ever going to have a cultural truth again?
So what's so interesting is Lynch's answer to that question. So Lynch says the problem with, say, the climate change debate is that scientists can only resort to science, whereas people who don't believe in climate change will just reject the scientific method, right? They find their truth in the literal truth of the Bible. is a similar problem with interpreting the Constitution. With some, you know, the different constitutional arguments understand the Constitution as a document differently. Some understand it as a historical document, some do not.
When in fact, by the way, just to interject, the Constitution calls for truth, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's part of our Constitution.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. So then if you can't use reason as our shared belief system, like we know how to know what we know because we all believe in reasoning, we should just accept, he says, that we don't all believe in reasoning anymore. And so therefore, we have to come up with a different set of beliefs about how we know what we know that we do all believe in, because we don't all believe in the divine revelation either. The one thing that we share is a commitment to civic discourse and the participation of every citizen. And for that citizenship to be possible, for us to be sovereign, us to rule ourselves, we are required to engage with one another as intellectual equals.
Jill Lepore, author of After the Fact, an article in The New Yorker, talking about sort of the history of lying and its current role in the campaign. She teaches history at Harvard University. Jill, thank you.
Thank you.